You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show, serviced by Jaffco Plumbing and Sewer.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Are you ready for a good team?
Waiting on John Buccigross to join us here in just a minute or two. Mike Salk Show on 710 ESPN Seattle. We're going to be playing the fairy horn as much as possible. So heads up, this is not a big semi-truck behind you or anything. It's just the fairy horn. I'm hearing it after goals here at Climate Pledge Arena and the Kraken score. Justin, where'd you find that?
Oh, you know, just my standard fairy horn message board. PNW Fairy Nerd is the one who's been helping me out on the information here.
Oh, good. PNW Fairy Nerd. So there's people who get really into the whole fairies and their horns. I mean, that would make sense. They're in a bit of a pickle right now, though, right?
This guy's a YouTube account where he posts horns and fairy and train whistles. He has 103 versions of the Marine Vessel Spokane on his channel.
103 different versions?
The one boat.
Because it all sounds different, what, and like in different climates, or like
I don't know.
Fog, in rain, in sun, like maybe?
And all these comments like, oh, thanks for sharing your collection of horns, which I presume is growing every time you see or hear another one. I'm glad you like ship whistles and horns because lots of us do too. What is your favorite?
That sounds filthy.
My personally, I like the Queen of Coquitlam's whistle because it has a very nice sound to it.
Please, thank you for sharing your collection of horns.
PNW Fairy Nerd is just, man, filling this niche gap.
You know what? That is, you know, people make fun of, there's a lot of awful things about the internet and social media and some of the horror shows that have, you know, it has brought upon our country. But stuff like that is awesome. Jokes aside, I'm so glad that PNW Fairy Nerd has found their place and that there's a huge group of people that can find each, because where else would you find other fairy nerds?
I know it.
Other than on an internet message board. I think that's like the greatest thing about the internet.
The NHL Kraken, they have a Kallenberg KM110. That they have confirmed that's the boat. So
the Kallenberg KN110?
KM110. That's the horn.
Why do you think they chose that horn? Do you think there was like a horn process of trying to figure out which one would be the best one?
I'm guessing PNW Fairy Nerd helped.
Let's talk to John Buccigross. He'll join us right now. He's doing the play-by-play tonight on ESPN. He's also the host of The Point, new hockey show on ESPN. John, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
You bet. Good morning.
How about this, man? Hockey back on ESPN. What was your reaction? I mean, we'll get to the Kraken in a second, but I mean, I know that you've been a huge hockey fan and like the lone light in the darkness at ESPN for years and years. And to finally get hockey back on the network, got to be pretty darn cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I've been there 25 years, and to be this re-energized about your job after doing it for that long, especially in one place. You know, I've said recently that there's probably not too many second grade teachers who've been doing it for 25 years be like, yeah, another year. You know, it's like, so it's pretty cool that I get kind of re-energized after a long run with, you know, like with this gift of the NHL coming back.
So is that all you're going to, are you done SportsCenter? Are you just going to do play by play and The Point? Is that like your whole focus now?
I think, you know, for now, we'll see what happens. Going forward, I know I'm not doing any this month or next month, but I'm sure once things maybe in the summer, go back to do some SportsCenter, or maybe we'll sprinkle some things in. So, but for now, it's nice to have a focus on one thing. You can really, you know, just read and study one subject. It's much easier, and it's fun to kind of dive back in again. So I enjoy that part. So yeah, I'll be doing The Point on Thursdays. Then I'll go to the airport, fly to my city. Up most of my games are on Fridays, and so that's pretty cool. And you know, go all these different rinks, and like I said, my battery's full. I really haven't traveled a lot in my career, luckily. You know, I've been mainly a studio guy, and now the kids are grown, so it's cool. I didn't miss much there, but now my battery is still full. I'm sure most men and women who have been in the business this long, you know, the travel, the hotel, all that stuff is kind of arduous and kind of a pain in the butt. But for me, like I said, I've never really done it before, so the battery's full.
The Maura and Justin were asking me earlier how I fell in love with hockey. We're talking a little bit about my, you know, growing up. The first sporting event I ever went to was a Bruins and Capitals game at the old Boston Garden. So what is it for you? How did you fall in love with the game?
Yeah, my dad was born and raised in Boston, raised us in the Pittsburgh area, Western Pennsylvania and Eastern Ohio. So it was just part of my upbringing. It was one of the, you know, like most American kids are football, basketball, baseball. I just, you know, happened to add hockey to that. I collected hockey cards, you know, played hockey, could skate. It was just another sport. And my dad was a sports mad kind of guy. And so, yeah, I was raised with the game. So at a young age.
Yeah, it's unique. It's interesting the way that, you know, for some folks we grow up, there's four sports and they are all sort of equivalent. Other folks, it's just three, I guess, sort of depending on where in the country you grow up. But hockey has a different culture, right? I mean, how would you describe what makes hockey different?
Yeah, it is different. It was always so Canadian for so long. So it was almost like a foreign sport. From a faraway land. I think kind of like Premier League soccer is for people. They kind of like how that's grown in popularity in the last decade. You know, it's just a different flavor, different culture, the accents, the whole thing, the names, the whole European flair and the international part of the game. And, you know, hockey was like that growing up. It was 90% Canadian when I was a kid. And then slowly more Americans and then a few Czechs and Swedes in the 70s and 80s. And then, of course, the Russian influence with the Russian Five slowly coming over and then now completely being an international game, the best, you know, hockey league in the world. So, but at first for me, it was just very Canadian. It was, you know, it wasn't on TV a lot, had a mystery to it. I listened to a lot of games on the radio, so I invented the game in my head. It always had kind of a gothic kind of feel to it to me, a violent and blood and these old arenas and organs. It was like church almost. It was like a punk rock, gothic, My Chemical Romance video, you know, all turned into one big crock pot. It was kind of weird, but it was a little different. And it was that, like I said, that foreign element wasn't accessible. It was kind of out there. And so those who loved it really loved it. And so you really felt a bond with another person once you find out they loved hockey.
We got John Buccigross with me here. He'll be doing the play-by-play tonight of the very first game the Kraken will ever play that counts, which is awesome. We're lucky here, by the way. John Forsland will be doing the games locally on the road, and he is a true pro. So I feel so lucky that people here in Seattle are going to get to experience hockey the way it's meant to be. And so we're helping to kind of learn as a city what this sport means. And when we talk about culture, hockey seems to have, as much as any sport, reverence for its own game. The players have reverence and respect. I would say it feels like more than any other sport.
Yeah, it's a game built on sacrifice, and it's always been part of the ethic. You know, the especially, like I said, coming from Canada and kind of hard living up there in the early 20th century, mid 20th century. You know, not a lot of wealth in the world at that time, and life was difficult and on farms and small towns And nothing was handed to you. It was a big sacrifice just to go out and play in cold weather, to tie skates, to have your parents take you to the rink. It's a lot of sacrifice involved. And so I think kids see a lot of that sacrifice at a young age. It is a sport that requires a lot of times a couple of parents, you know, to take you to the rink and the sacrifice and any extra money, they give it to you. And so you can play hockey for your skates and your equipment. And so they see that sacrifice. It's kind of unspoken. They see it and they kind of use that as a model, and they grow up that way. So it does take a lot of sacrifice, and that's the word I think I always come back to with hockey and why people are, those who love it and those who observe it like that ethic. They like that part of the game.
What do you make of the Kraken? What do you make of the team?
Yeah, I mean, it looks good. Built from the back end out, which I think every team should, even like a team like the Buffalo Sabres, they should start over and they should do that. They should start with goalies and defensemen. And they're kind of doing that. They drafted Owen Power out of Michigan last year, number one. They have Rasmus Dahlin. They should keep on that track. And that's what the Kraken's plan was. Get two good goalies. They have one of the best goalie tandems in all the NHL. Get good defensemen back there. Unfortunately, some hit with the COVID stuff tonight won't be there, but to have good, big, sturdy defensemen who can get the puck out, and then just good all-around 200-foot forwards. It's, you know, will they score enough? Will someone pop? That's like Vegas popped a couple, you know, 4 years ago, and William Karlsson went from 8 goals to 41, and Eric Halla had led the team with power play goals. You know, can Jared McCann be a guy that gets 35 out of nowhere? And, and Donskoy and Yonkrok, and they get high 20. So that's what's going to, you know, they need someone to pop offensively that they don't expect, because they should be a very good structured defensive team that works hard. And depth. Vegas was very healthy in year one. They went to the Stanley Cup final. Seattle, obviously, they haven't had any drafted players yet. They just have expansion drafts, and all the kids they drafted this year are too young. So any kind of injuries, and we're seeing that kind of now, tonight, that will be a problem.
Favorite hockey player of all time before we let you go here?
Cam Neely is like my guy. He's kind of a peer. You know, growing up in my early 20s, he was my age. It's why I think people you see gravitate, young people gravitate towards hockey, Austin Matthews and all those young players, because they're that age. And so Cam was my guy because he could score, he could fight, he was rough, all the parts I like about the game. And so he was that guy for me.
You ever been in an elevator with Cam? I've had the privilege a few times.
I
used to cover the Bruins, and so after games when he was the president, I guess he still is, you'd get into the elevator, and they'd hold the elevator for the coaching staff and the executives, and Cam would come in, and if first of all, he takes up the whole elevator. He's huge. But if they had lost, the intensity and anger that would just exude out of Cam Neely was about as frightening as anything I've ever been around. Such a
disaster, man.
Exactly. All right, Bucci, we appreciate it. Thank you so much. Hopefully we can do this again. We're looking forward to hearing you and seeing you on the call tonight, and just glad that we finally have real hockey here in Seattle. It's pretty darn cool. So thank you very much.
Yeah, big night for Seattle, and I'll be out there in November calling a game.
Awesome.
Can't wait to see your rink as well. So looking forward to it.
Very cool. There you go. There's John Buccigross. So you can hear him on Play-by-Play. And he's also hosting his new show, The Point, Thursdays on ESPN2. How about that?
There's
really
a
cool.
A couple times there. You've seen Wayne's World, right?
Of course.
Where they're all toasting champagne, and it's Cassandra, Wayne, Rob Lowe. I forget his name. I felt like Garth there for a minute, like trying to like toast champagne. Like I have no idea who this player is. I'm like, yeah, I'm involved.
Yeah.
That's,
you know,
that's
the one thing he said there. First of all, Buccigross is great. He does a really
good
job.
I've been watching Buccigross on ESPN since my entire life.
I used to work with a guy named Bob Halloran in Boston, who had done some Sports Center work with Buccigross, and said he is by far the funniest person he's ever been around. He just loves the guy. But I think what he said there is really a perfect description of what sets hockey apart, is that it's a game built on sacrifice. It's well stated. And I don't need to just go over everything you just said with the, you know, parents taking you to the rink and all the sacrifice that's necessary to make the game work, but it's on the ice too. You know, we mentioned one phrase that I love in hockey is takes the hit to move the puck, absorbs the hit to move the puck. Right, it's one of those things that happens in hockey where you have the puck on your stick and you want to move it up ice and you need to bring a defender closer to you, and the closer he gets, the longer you hold it, and then eventually you wait. He's gonna hit you, and you have to absorb that hit in order to move the puck up ice. It's like the quarterback standing longer in the pocket on every single play. That's how you have success in hockey. You sacrifice your body to move the puck up ice. You jump in front of a 100-mile-an-hour slap shot in order to keep it from getting to the net. And you take that off your skate or your leg or your body or wherever it happens to hit. Hopefully it hits a pad, but maybe it doesn't. And you deal with that, right? You have a tooth that gets knocked out. They all do. That's sort of the legendary hockey thing, but it's true. You get back out there and you keep playing.
Which is why it's nuts to me how long some of these careers last when how brutal of a game it is.
Sacrifice, man. They learn to sacrifice. It is a sport built for tough people. You cannot play this game unless you're tough. It's one of the many reasons I chose basketball in the winter. I'm not tough enough to play hockey, but I completely respect it. I really do. And then just the athletic gifts and the beauty of watching this sport, the way they can skate. Honestly, there's nothing like it. I will stop short of calling hockey my favorite sport, because I think baseball has been my favorite sport for years. And honestly, football, baseball, hockey, like I love all, now golf, like I love all of them. I try not to, it's like choosing between your children. Obviously, I have my favorite, but I would never say it out loud. No, I'm just kidding. You try not to choose, but I could make you a pretty good case that hockey is my favorite sport, and that it is as fun to watch as any other sport on the planet. I truly love it, and I can't wait for tonight.
If you're just tuning in and didn't get all the PNW fairy nerd talk,
yes, good.
Sounds like our fairy nerd may have texted in.
Really?
It's a foghorn, not a fairy horn. Each maritime vessel has one, and the time varies based on the size of the vessel, similar to the vehicle horns.
So wait, do you think that's actually PNW fairy nerd or whatever you said, or just somebody else?
Is that you, PNW fairy
nerd? I'd really like to find that person and maybe have them on the show. 8:15, time for Need to Know.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
The wait is over. The building's been built. The name has been chosen. The jerseys are out. The roster's been drafted. And yes, finally, tonight, we will see the Kraken play their inaugural season beginning in Las Vegas. Seahawks and theirs went 2-14. That was 76. Next year, the Mariners went 64-98. Not too much better. The Sounders, a little more successful in their first season. They went 12-7-11 in 09. The Kraken should have some pretty good benefits. They have a weaker division, pretty favorable draft process, so the expectation is they will have a playoff team in year one. That campaign begins tonight. Yesterday, they named Mark Giordano as the team captain. Four players will rotate through the two alternates each night, so Jordan Eberle, Jaden Schwartz, Yanni Gourde, Adam Larsson will all wear A's at various points. To wear a C, to be the captain, it's got an immense history and meaning in the NHL amongst those players and amongst the teams. They treat it with great honor and great reverence, so congratulations to Mark. That's awesome. There is also an official role to the captaincy or the alternates. They are the only ones designated to communicate with referees on the ice, and so whoever, whether it's the captain or if he's off the ice, one of the alternates, they are the ones who hear explanations of rules and have conversations with officials. Unfortunately, some bad news. Does sound like COVID has ripped through the roster, so up to five players may miss tonight's opener. That would include first-line center Jared McCann. If you're watching the Kraken and curious what to look for to see if they're having success tonight other than just what the score of the game is, look to see how much they can control the puck deep in the other team's zone. How long can they get it in there and then cycle through while keeping the puck in the offensive zone? That will eventually lead to goals. Obviously, whether or not that first line can score is huge. Of course, we don't know who's going to play center with Jared McCann potentially out.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Story started on Friday and really came to a head yesterday. John Gruden officially resigning as a head coach in Las Vegas after a second group of emails surfaced in which he used homophobic and misogynistic language. This followed last week's email in which he used racist language to describe Demore Smith, the head of the players' union. So the emails were sent from Gruden to Bruce Allen when Gruden was at ESPN as a color commentator and Allen was the team president at the time in Washington. In the emails, he refers to Roger Goodell with a homophobic slur. He criticizes him for forcing Jeff Fisher to draft a gay player, although he used another slur there, and then also complained about the hiring of female officials in the league. Oh, the two also exchanged photos of topless women, including Washington cheerleaders. So, yeah, that's a lot to come out in a very short time. As G said earlier, he hit the trifecta. Say this, Gruden forfeited his right to work in the NFL, that's for sure. His comments are gross, end statement. Additionally, it's interesting to try to see how this came out and what we can learn from it. It stems from an investigation into the culture of the Washington football team, specifically under owner Dan Snyder. And it's also important to note that John Gruden so far is the only one who's been taken down by this. Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, was even speculating yesterday the league wanted Gruden to resign and threatened to leak even more emails if he did not. I don't know if that's true, but I will say it fits the lack of transparency that we've come to expect from Roger Goodell in this league. Questions: how prevalent are emails and sentiments like this throughout the league? Why would they only leak certain emails? Do they have more? Do they have a trove of information that they could use to blackmail other executives that they want out? The NFL just strikes me as incredibly opaque, and I don't understand how they operate in this world. Generally, what we've seen from them is they don't do anything until they have enough public sentiment to make it easy. And for that, they usually need something in writing, in this case, or something on video, like in Ray Rice's case. Ultimately, I wonder if John Gruden was singled out because he's the only one who feels this way. I doubt it. If he's the only one stupid enough to provide written proof of how he feels, again, I sort of doubt it. Or because somebody just hated him enough to leak the proof, and that seems entirely likely to me.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Well, Pete Carroll's going to retreat even further into what makes him most comfortable. He did get some good news on that front. Sounds like the Seahawks will have Chris Carson, and he would be practically a necessity if indeed they're going to try to run the ball a little bit more often to soften the blow of not having Russell Wilson. Having that power running game is important, certainly to Pete Carroll, and hopefully Carson will be able to go this week. May get a chance to see Gerald Everett. He should be back as well. Ethan Posick may be able to give it a go. So hopefully some good news there on the injury front for the Seahawks. It was a crazy awesome sports day yesterday. Monday Night Football ends with an overtime touchdown. Baltimore beats Indy. Just an absurd, absurd game for Lamar Jackson. Is he the most fun player to watch in the NFL? Easy yes. I'll watch him over Patrick Mahomes. I don't know that I'd rather have him on my team, but in terms of fun players to watch in the NFL, who's more fun than Lamar Jackson?
Question. Yeah, I think it's Lamar.
I think it's Lamar. It's not close. Maybe Kyler.
I was going to say, Kyler's pretty fun, but Lamar's different.
It's not Lamar fun.
I think he was responsible for something crazy like 498 of their 520 offensive yardage.
It was 442 plus on through the air and 62 on the ground. So I don't like doing math on the radio, but that's over 500. He himself would be 14th in the league in total yards this year compared to all the other teams. Just amazing. Red Sox walk it off for the second straight night. This time it was a ninth inning sack fly from Kike Hernandez. That eliminates the Rays, so they're done. Sad shot of Nelson Cruz in the dugout. Braves take a 2-1 series lead. Jock Peterson, who's been wearing pearls for whatever reason throughout the playoffs, he had a huge pinch hit, 3-run shot in that game as the only scoring. He's been really funny in talking about the pearls.
Like he gave us the reason. We just can't say it.
I can't say it, but it's worth like.
He said because he's a bad bee, right?
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. Good for him. Tremendous finish in LA last night. Dodgers' Gavin Lux looked like he had a home run to tie it with two outs in the ninth, but no, the wind knocked it down. Giants win 1-0 and lead that series. Today, we got Houston, Chicago. They were rained out yesterday. That's at 11. Milwaukee, Atlanta at 2. Giants, LA at 6. All game fours. There you go. That's three things you need to know.
And I just
it was sort of like that one drive I hit on 16 yesterday. Or rather the
16 of 15?
Well, I don't know. Maybe we go with the, what was it? The par three, number three, where it looked like we thought it was going to go to the green, and the wind just totally knocked it down. It was like 12, 15 yards short.
Yes.
That was like that home. I thought it was a home run last night. I was watching the game. Oh, that's gone. Nope.
Yeah, the wind killed it.
Just killed it.
The amount of texts we're getting, the amount of things I'm seeing on Twitter and Reddit, I just want Seahawks fans to be happy. I want the people who doomed Russ to eat an L. I want Geno to be serviceable.
Yes.
We all want the same thing. We all want the Seahawks to win, right?
Yes.
What can you tell me to make me feel that way about Geno?
I don't have
enough information on Geno outside of that last drive.
I've been as critical of Geno as anybody. Like, I've watched him in the preseason every year, and I've been like, they need somebody else to be their backup quarterback. I felt like they're in a complete, like, it's a disaster if Russell goes out. That's been my take since forever.
Guys, I don't think you know enough about him, so I've actually come up with a little trivia game to help you.
Geno trivia?
To help us all get to know Geno a little better.
Well, that sounds great. Let's get to know him together. Next, Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.
This is the Mike Salk Show.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Getting to know you, putting it my way, but nicely.
What's this from?
I don't know, but it's a banger.
I didn't know until I looked it up.
It's from a musical.
Yeah, I figured that. Is it from, I don't know.
I know it's Julie Andrews. I don't know what it's from, though.
The
Sound
King
of Music?
And I.
Oh, The King and I. That makes sense.
I'm not sure. It didn't look like Julie Andrews in that.
Sounds like Julie Andrews.
Pretty sure it's Julie Andrews.
Doesn't mean it is her. I think all things that sound like they're from like this just all are Julie Andrews to me, though. All right, so getting to know you. Why are we playing that today? Not just to torture everybody driving around in your car this morning and desperately trying to get to work. No, we're trying to learn about Geno Smith. He's going to start a quarterback for the Seahawks, and all of us realize we know almost nothing about him. I don't even know everywhere he's played before he was here. So
you said he was a first-round pick. Pete said he was a first-round
pick. We were both wrong. Pete doesn't even know anything about Geno Smith. So thankfully, we have Maura. Maura has done the research. Maura knows about Geno Smith, and she's going to help us learn.
I'm not going to lie. There's not a ton out there. You know, I was trying to find some fun stuff, just like his favorite food or music, or there's not a ton.
Nothing.
But I have some information here for you.
All right, what do we know about Geno Smith?
But you're going to have to do, it's multiple choice, so we're gonna play a little game. You guys are going to have to guess.
All right, what do we got?
So the first one is, when Geno was a kid, did he A, win a poetry contest, B, compete in chess tournaments, or C, get accepted into a school of the arts?
Oh, okay. Quarterback, I think, like, engineer brain. I think smart. I think chess.
Okay.
That's where my brain goes right first.
I think Gino, I think creative, and so I kind of think maybe he goes towards the arts.
Do we have to agree on one more, or do we have...
But
we
I can also make you a strong argument. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going poetry. I think that occasionally you find out that athletes enroll themselves into, like, the poetry side of the world, so I'm going to say it is A, poetry.
Okay. No, you can pick a separate one, okay. Justin.
I'm going chess.
Okay. Sorry, trick question to start. Actually, all three.
Oh, whoa. So all right.
We both got it right.
So Geno Smith competed in... Apparently, he was... deemed as gifted and talented. They told his mom he could skip a grade.
Okay.
He competed in chess tournaments, won an oratorical contest in fifth grade for reciting the poetry of Langston Hughes, an early to mid-20th century essayist and jazz poet, and was admitted to the New World School of the Arts in Miami for his drawing and sketching abilities.
Well, you answered another question I was going to have, which is where did he grow up?
Yeah.
And now I know it's Miami.
But he decided to go to Miramar to play football instead of the School of the Arts.
As a big Langston Hughes guy, I'm really happy to hear that he also carries the Langston Hughes flag.
Sounds like it's worked out for him. He made the right choice to go to Miramar.
So I think we're tied. One and one?
Yeah. Well, we were both right.
We were both right.
All right, cool. All right, so now we know a little bit about Gino's childhood.
All right, now you guys, I want you to name the NFL teams Gino has been a part of. There are four, including the Seahawks.
Seahawks?
So there's one.
Jets?
I think we said Chargers.
Chargers?
For a second.
I think he was with the Chargers.
Okay. I don't know the fourth one.
I know he was with another. I knew there were four, and I looked at this literally like yesterday.
Was there a team that just like lost a quarterback? Like, I mean, similar to the Seahawks, and they just needed somebody for a couple weeks that he played for.
I don't know. I want to say which conference is it in, Maura?
NFC.
NFC.
Okay.
Carolina.
No.
Darn it.
For a second,
I don't have any idea.
Washington.
I don't have a clue.
It's actually the other New York team.
Oh!
The Giants.
You know what?
So he was Jets 2013-16, Giants 2017. Chargers 2018, and then Seahawks 2019 now.
I do not have anything close to a photographic memory, but I told you I looked at his Pro Football Reference page yesterday, and in my mind, the other team there was the Giants, but I thought to myself, no, there's no way he went to the other New York team, and so I didn't say it. So
2017?
Now I'm bummed about that. There you go. All right, so the Jets, the Giants, the Chargers, which I don't remember at all. I just happened to see it yesterday, and the Hawks. Okay.
All right. Okay. So I think,
and I know he went to West Virginia, right? I think I know that.
I know that with Bruce Irvin. So we're still tied 1-1.
All right. Well, sure.
We'll go. Next one is true or false.
Okay.
This is about his time at West Virginia. Gino once threw for 650 yards in one game.
True.
No way. False.
They had a crazy offense there. I think he did do that.
Salk is right.
Yeah.
He went 45 of 51 for 656 yards and 8 touchdowns in a 70-63 win over Baylor.
Yeah, I kind of remember that. I remember that that's like the first time his name became like a big thing, and then he ended up sort of like living off of that all the way to a second round pick.
Does that record still stand?
I would hope. Yeah.
That is nuts. All right. Okay, well then you're okay.
All right, we're getting to know Geno Smith here. We've learned quite a bit about him so far.
All right, a lot has been said about Geno's ability to win coin tosses for the Seahawks. Jim Trotter asked him about it after he won back-to-back coin flips against the Buccaneers and 49ers in 2019. What was his answer? A, that he calls heads every time. B, that he practices the coin toss repeatedly, did his own math on it. C, that he calls the opposite of whatever the game-opening coin toss is.
Oh, I like that question. My gut is to go again with like the first one, the first question about him being a super smart guy and being a chess player. I think that he'd be the kind of guy that would sit in the locker room and flip a coin over and over, especially if he's going to be a backup here for a while. I'm going with that.
So you think he's done the research? That's what I think too. I'm saying he did the math.
All right. The answer is he calls the opposite of whatever the game opening coin toss is.
But that means he's got to remember throughout the whole game what the opening coin toss
is. He's like,
was.
If Russ calls tails to start the game, then I'm calling heads if we go to overtime.
So does he ask Russ what he called?
I don't know.
How does he know? Because he's not out there at the beginning.
So he told Jim Trotter, the exact quote is, because Russell Wilson called Tails to start the game. He said the mathematical odds always favored you to go in the opposite direction. He told me to do the math. And Trotter was like, that doesn't actually make
sense. That's not how that works.
It doesn't check out, Gino.
That's not how that works. Okay. But okay, so I like it. Hey, it's working for him. So
I mean, maybe he just pays attention at the beginning, but I guess he could ask Russ.
Yeah, what does he think? Like, he listens to the – because the ref will say, like – this is a, you know, like he is called heads. It is a heads, right? Like they'll make that announcement.
Oh yeah, with a spear. Yeah.
I guess he just has to listen really hard. Okay.
What an absurd question.
All right, the next one.
I gotta tell you, I still don't feel like I really know Geno Smith all that well.
I don't remember him being a giant, and that's offensive to me.
Let's see. The next one is what's his middle name? I've got three options, okay. And I stole the other ones from other Seahawks teammates so that we'll actually get to know those two. Right. So is it A, Anthony?
Geno Anthony.
B, Cyril.
Geno Cyril. That doesn't work.
Or three, Stephon.
Geno Stephon. I got to go Geno Anthony.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to think of when I got you shouted out, when you get your whole name shouted at you as a kid. I think that one sounds easiest.
Yeah, I got to go Geno Anthony.
Geno, I'm going to do the same thing, A.
It is Cyril.
Oh,
dang it.
Geno Cyril.
It is Dwayne Anthony Brown.
Okay.
And Damian Stephon Lewis.
Okay.
Geno Cyril Smith.
Geno Cyril Smith. That does not roll off the tongue. That's a challenge to say.
This is actually, I have a clip here of Geno explaining that Geno is actually not his full name.
Oh.
I go by my nickname. So Geno is not my real name. It's my nickname. And I got it from my dad, who got it from his dad. And so I'm the third. I'm Eugene Smith the third. And, you know, Geno is my nickname.
Eugene,
huh?
Eugene Cyril.
Eugene, that makes that, no, that starts to work.
That makes it work.
Eugene Cyril Smith, that I can hear. That I can understand.
Sounds more like a poetry fan, too, as a Eugene.
Yes, maybe he's a big fan of The King and I. I don't know. I mean, like, it sounds like
true.
He'd be into the getting to know you thing. Do we have more, or what do we have?
Then I also just have a couple of cuts here. Okay. He did a kind of getting to know you thing with Tyler Lockett on the Seahawks website. And I guess he's interested in real estate. And this is him explaining to Tyler why.
Well, I started with my mom. My mom started out as an entrepreneur pretty young. She's a self-made millionaire entrepreneur. She started her business as a small business down in Florida. She also does philanthropy. It's called Parenting with a Purpose, where she helps all the young mothers in the community.
I believe he said his mom was a self-made millionaire entrepreneur.
Cool. Yeah, that's what I heard too.
So far, what you're succeeding in doing, I don't know that I know anything more about Geno Smith and how he's going to play this weekend, but you're succeeding me in liking and making me like Geno Smith.
That's good.
What I've heard is that he's capable of throwing 600 plus yards.
Yeah, I kind of like him now. I like the stories about his mom and all that.
This was one of my favorites too. So the follow-up to that, Lockett was like, well, then you have to like HGTV, right? And then we find out how much Tyler Lockett apparently loves HGTV.
Apparently.
Okay, so you must watch HGTV.
I do.
Okay, we got something in common. So what's your favorite show?
Just all the home improvement shows.
Okay, yeah, I'm like a Property Brothers.
Yeah.
Love It or List It. Fixer Upper. Like, those are the type of shows that I like watching. Yeah.
I don't think Geno's as into HGTV as Tyler Lockett is.
Doesn't sound
I was really hoping we were going to find out that he was P&W Fairy Nerd. He's like, no, I'm actually more of a whistle guy.
Yeah, I'm big into whistles, just like John Clayton. All right, well, thank you, Maura. That was great. I feel like I'm ready to root for Geno Smith. We're certainly going to learn more about the Seahawks in general as he has got the helm. He's in charge. He's the quarterback on Sunday for the first time since 2011. Somebody else will be under center for the Seahawks. All right, John Clayton going to join us next. Are any other backup options emerging for the Seahawks? We'll ask John that question a whole lot more. Don't go anywhere.
John Clayton's Morning Drive, every morning at 8:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
I thought you saw a lot of good things out of offense. I think that was a very positive sign.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Brought to you by Dubin Law Group.
It just amazes me. I give it credence, but not total credence.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Mike Salk.
Good morning, John.
Good morning, Mike.
What do you think? Is Lamar Jackson the most exciting player in the NFL?
Not the most exciting, but one of the most. I mean,
really?
He's so unique. And I know I had to do my MVP voting, and I'm probably going to be wrong on this. I had him down at number 5 because I obviously gave Kyler Murray the edge because he's 5-0. You know, certainly I had to get Tom Brady and all the guys ahead of him. I actually gave Dak Prescott number 4, but I gave Lamar number 5. But Lamar is so different than anything else we've seen since Michael Vick. And, you know, Michael Vick was, of course, you know, a guy that could throw the ball 70 yards downfield, run it and all that stuff. But Lamar Jackson is just sensational because when he runs, you can't stop him.
Yeah, the acceleration is so. That is the thing that I think reminds me of Vick is the acceleration. There was a play last night. There were a lot of great plays last night, but one that stood out. He looked like he was going to get caught in the backfield, and then it looked like he just went in reverse. He didn't run backwards, he ran back. He didn't turn around, but he went quickly backwards, went out around the side of the pocket, and then accelerated for just a 5-yard gain. But it's just like, man, nobody else can do that.
Well, what's great is that how he's grown, particularly in the last year, because you know, remember how bad he was in comeback games?
Mm-hmm.
And now he has one of the greatest comebacks in NFL history. You know, throws for over 400 yards, doing all those different things. I mean, it's great to see because, again, remember, this is a guy that's down, you know, three running backs, Nick Bowles at tight end, their first-round draft choice, you know, their left tackle, their left guard, and yet he's able to keep the offense up to a point where they're able to come back and get a victory, which was so good.
Yeah.
And it's like it was remarkable to see what he was able to do.
It was a great game. Fun to watch. Great victory. He's awesome. It's still ridiculous to me that the Colts don't get to touch the ball in overtime. It just doesn't make sense.
I'm fine with that.
So the other team doesn't get a chance to score? Why? Like, one team gets 66 minutes to score. The other team gets 60?
Well, because, again, the idea is you want to prevent ties. And so if it's going to be a field goal, okay, fine. I don't even like the field goal. I like the sudden death. You get the points, you win the game.
I just totally disagree. I think it is so unfair for the team that doesn't win a coin toss, which is just a matter of sheer luck. Although Geno Smith does seem like he's got a bit of a plan. Mm-hmm. He says he calls whatever the opposite of what was called in the opening coin tosses. So maybe there is some skill to the whole thing. Who knows? What any news on a potential quarterback that could be added to this roster?
Yeah, what I'm wondering, because so many people like yourself are thinking, it should be Cam Newton, But Cam Newton's not a fit here because, again, you know, he's a big quarterback. He doesn't have accuracy. He can run, no doubt about it. But, my question is, do they bring in Blake Bortles and can they talk him into being on the practice squad, which he's been within the last year, and then, be available? I mean, that to me would be a great option. Other options, I don't know, but no update on that.
Meanwhile, biggest story in the NFL is what happened with John Gruden and his emails yesterday. What do you make of it?
Well, I mean, it's like, I don't know. We worked with him at ESPN like you and I did. I mean, I never expected this. I never expected these type of emails to come from him forever. I mean, again, started in 2011 with his rip of D. Smith and then, all these things through the years. But I had no idea that he was sending the type of emails that he sent. And my guess is what ended up happening is that in the Washington investigation on Dan Snyder, they took all the emails from Bruce Allen, the former general manager of the Washington football team, and all of a sudden seeing all these things from Gruden, and it's like, okay, well, let's see what we can do against Gruden. Now, they need to do something against Dan Snyder.
Yeah, what's going on there? And I think that's a question a lot of people have today.
Yeah,
And no one, I haven't heard anybody say John Gruden's getting a raw deal. The opposite.
No.
He deserves everything that is coming to him right
now.
Agreed. But should there be more? It seems odd that this is the only thing that's come of this investigation.
Yeah, again, it's like at some point, and again, you know how it is in the NFL, they don't like to take penalties against owners. They try to give owners a break.
But that reaches a conclusion eventually, whether it's Jerry Richardson or in the NBA. Mm-hmm. We saw it with Donald Sterling. Like, there does come a point where even the wealthiest NFL owner can't run anymore and the league has to take action.
They should. I mean, because, again, you're looking at an owner who allowed how he's involved. Now, there's some involvement by him, but the big thing, he allowed the top of the organization to do so many bad things to women, whether it's going to be, taping things that the cheerleaders were doing or, harassing and sexually making comments about the women working in the organization.
Well, that seemed like almost the biggest thing that came out of the Gruden stuff was this, that he and Bruce Allen were sending topless photos back and forth, including of Washington cheerleaders. Ridiculous.
I know.
I can't believe, I mean, of all the things, that honestly, I don't know if it's the most shocking, but it might be the one that makes my jaw drop. Just like, I can't believe that was happening.
I can't believe it either, because again, I'm tight with Bruce Allen, because I mean, we've known each other for so many years, particularly.
Well, he's going to have some splaining to do too, John.
Yeah, and of course, I mean, he's not
in the league right now.
No,
right?
He's not. He's living in Phoenix, and you know, obviously not right now at the point where he's going to get back in the league, and now may not get back in the league. But yeah, it's bad. Mm. And then of course the Gruden thing is just a disaster. I mean, I'm happy that they were able to reach a quick decision as to what to do with him, because again, he needed to be at least released, right, or resigned or whatever.
I've heard it speculated even that the league might have more emails and would have continued to release more and more if he didn't resign or if Oakland didn't make a move. So it sounds like it's possible the league forced their hand even.
They did, because again, I don't think Mark Davis wanted to do anything. Remember, he's got a 10-year, $100 million contract.
Not anymore, he doesn't. Now he resigned. He didn't get fired, right? So Mark Davis doesn't have to pay that out. I'm sure they reached some sort of a settlement. They must have.
I'm sure they haven't reached a settlement yet, but at some point you have to think they're going to get a settlement. But again, it's like, what a disaster, because you know, after 3 years of bad football, Gruden finally turned his team around to get to a 3-0 start. Now, I know they've lost their last two games, and now things are going to get worse with him out of there. But again, I'm just so happy that they did something, because something needed to happen because of how bad these emails were and how bad it was with John Gruden. I mean, again, you work with him, I work with him. I never expected this.
No. Good stuff, John. Appreciate it. We will talk tomorrow.
Okay.
There you go. John Clayton, every day. I don't know how much I directly worked with John Gruden. We had him on the show a couple of times. It's not like I was running buddies or anything. But, yeah, I don't know whether you ever expect anything like this. I mean, but when you read it or when you see it, I don't know. I think I've sort of lost some of my ability to be surprised by some of this stuff, honestly. I mean, like, I was not necessarily surprised to see that a person who's been as entitled as long or as privileged as John Gruden has been, that there were things like this on it. No, I wasn't that surprised. I will admit that the photos, the topless photos of the cheerleaders, was a bit of a shock. That one just gets sort of thrown in there. It's like, whoa, wait, that's a big deal in and of itself. And, you know, well, Bruce Allen may be gone. And as John said, not going to get back into the league. And so whatever his role in the, you know, racist, sexist, homophobic emails are, you know, I don't even know. But in his role as team president of the Washington team, combined with the pictures that were sent back and forth, which means he would have been the one with access to them who would have sent them to John Gruden. That seems specifically problematic. The idea of the manager having topless photos of people that work at the company below him, I guess they didn't report directly to him, but still, that seems completely insane.
Yeah, criminal. Do we know if it was just the two on this email?
I don't know. There may have been other people on the thread. I mean, I guess what we know right now is very limited. But the idea that I don't know if he was the GM or the president. It'd be interesting to know. If he's the president, in theory, they reported up to him. That's insane.
Ugh.
That, to me, is where this story ends up going. Now, once we get done with Gruden, as we should, like, forget him. He's in bad trouble, and he deserves every bit of it. Bruce Allen's a president of the team, and he has naked pictures, topless pictures of women that work under him? What? And then he's sharing them?
Accusations in the Washington Post details of the whole investigation of this, that I'm not sure if these were the pictures, but there were accusations that they took pictures of the cheerleaders in states of undress without them knowing.
Oh my gosh. I mean, that whole thing, what a mess. How is Dan Snyder possibly going to survive that? If Donald Sterling no longer has the Clippers and Jerry Richardson no longer has the Panthers, this will end. I predict that when you say that, this will end for Daniel Snyder, and that the poor fans in Washington will get their team back like they deserve. Let's get back to the hockey. There's some good stuff going on tonight, man. We got actual gameplay tonight. The Kraken are in action, and we're going to talk to one of the people who helped as an architect of this thing. A Hall of Famer, a medalist, an Olympic medalist, and a pro scout. Cammy Granato joins us next. Mike Salk Show, 710 ESPN Seattle.